Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens. Transform your home with the warmth of an Irish-made kitchen. Cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
Email todaycb at rte.ie.
Now it's time for our Friday gathering. This week I'm joined by Fine Gael TD for Dublin Mid West and Minister of State for Business, Employment and Retail, Eimear Higgins. We've Labour MEP for Dublin, Eoin O'Riordan. We have political editor with the Irish Examiner, Elaine Loughlin, and campaign coordinator with Focus Ireland and co-founder of single parent advocacy group Spark, Louise Bayliss. And you're all welcome. Thank you for being here. I'm going to start by going back to something we talked about earlier in the programme. Indeed, we've spoken about it a lot on the programme this week. What's going on at Dublin Airport? What's coming down the track with this plan or proposal to cut passenger numbers next summer? Eoin, I'm going to come to you first, because in your new job as an MEP, really reducing emissions has to happen at EU level.
Yeah.
Is it time to breach the cap? So increase the cap, let as many people as want to come in and out of Dublin Airport, and impose climate measures on airports and the airline industry elsewhere in another way?
Well, there's a lot going on there. I mean, I listened to the debate earlier, and I thought one of the contributions was quite outrageous, that to expect the Taoiseach to intervene in the planning application or planning process. I thought those days were well behind us, and I thought
Eoin O'Mara Walsh says this is that serious.
You can't have politicians interfering in the planning process. There's a planning process ongoing. The DDA, who, you know, I've spoken to Duncan Smith about this, you know, they have a very poor record of community engagement, and when it comes to aircraft noise, smell, their own workforce, how they've dealt with the trade unions there. So right. They've accepted themselves from their own statement that they've made a mess of it, right? So they've a lot of catching up to do. But as has been said, you know, there's a relationship that the airport needs to have with Fingal County Council. That needs to be maximised and expedited, that whole process. But the suggestion that any government minister or any politician would get involved in that is really not good.
Okay, all right. For you, that's not a runner. Eimear Higgins, we heard though from Eoin O'Mara Walsh just how serious this could be. And from your perspective and your portfolio in business, I mean, this is disastrous, is it not?
This is a huge issue, and it's something that is going to be affecting our tourism. It's something that's going to be affecting our ability to win investment. From a business perspective as well. And I do think that we need to get this fixed. Eoin is right, though. It's very difficult for the government or for the Taoiseach to intervene in a planning process. I mean, we set up the planning process as a distinct autonomous process for that reason, because we don't want political interference. I spent many a long, long day working on the Planning and Development Bill as a member of the Housing Committee, and it's all about making sure that we respect and protect the sanctity, if you like, of the planning process.
So is the only way to fix this Stephen Matthews' suggestion, which is a new planning application from the Dublin Airport Authority that solely addresses the passenger cap?
I think it is too, yes, absolutely.
I agree.
I think the DAA, honestly, I think have been a bit asleep at the wheel here. They should have had their planning applications in sooner than this. We can't also create precedent where if a state-owned company doesn't do something by a looming deadline, it's okay, the Taoiseach will intervene. You know, we have to be careful here and not set what could be ultimately dangerous precedents either. We do need this fixed, though. So I think the sooner that this gets in for planning decisions that can happen quickly on that particular issue of the cap, specifically, I think that'd be really important for our tourism and for our business and economy.
Does the passenger cap play a role in climate emissions and in climate change and our policy here?
There is that argument, I accept that. But at the same time, we are an island nation. Our airports are extremely important to us. And actually, so too are our airports outside of Dublin. And I think that's why we should be perhaps using this as an opportunity to look to reinvest in airports outside of Dublin. I know Senator John Cummins, for example, in Waterford, has been making that case for lengthening and widening the runway at Waterford, which could provide a hub for the growing eastern region. We know our population is rising. We don't want to be back in this situation where we're constantly reviewing an increase in caps at Dublin Airport.
So fly as much as you want. Emissions is not an issue.
Emissions is an issue. I accept that, Claire. But at the same time, it's also
But you're talking about expanding other airports.
I am, because that is really important for both our tourism and for our business capacity here in Ireland. We are an island nation. Our airports are huge strategic importance to us from both a societal perspective and also from an economic perspective.
Okay. Elaine, can I bring you in on this? Because that call for the Taoiseach to get involved, and we heard the political reaction to that, that it shouldn't happen. Is it a non-runner?
I think it definitely is. And you can see from the government's point of view, if they did say, right, we're going to make an exception here, does it become a sliding scale and then the Taoiseach is asked to intervene in every, I don't know, semi-detached home that wants an extension? You know, I'm exaggerating slightly, Claire, but once that decision is made for a government intervention, you don't know where it will go. And we know the history of planning in this country. We do not want to go back to that.
So the government has to wash its hands of this problem, does it?
Well, certainly, I think in the immediate term, there are longer term things that the government could look at with regards to legislation. That's not going to happen before the summer when we're going to be at a pinch point with this cap. I thought it was refreshing this morning that the DAA did come out, because in Ireland, a lot of the time, people try to get away with talking themselves out of any responsibility. They did put their hands up and say, it was our fault, we made a mess of this.
Yeah.
But what are they going to do now? Yep. I think it's all well and good to say you're responsible, you should have acted earlier. You now have to get on with it and try and find a solution.
Just to remind people who mightn't have heard what the DAA said this morning, DAA confirms it is part of the passenger cap mess. We agree we should have applied to increase the cap back in the 2016-18 period. We wish we had done. We take the learnings from what has happened, and DAA won't be found in that position again. But then they say, rather than trying to point the finger of blame, all parties will be better served at this stage by everyone being focused and thinking proactively about getting the passenger cap lifted. Louise, for you, I mean, we know that people who are hoping to come home for Christmas, Michael O'Leary has warned that they'll be paying €500 for the pleasure one way, so it's a grand to get home and back. Do you think that that gives rise to or makes credible calls for government to get involved?
I can understand the calls for government to get involved, but also I think I do accept Aon's point that you don't want to interfere with the planning permission. But it's great that DAA, you know, came out and said, yes, we did screw up. But where's the accountability in it? Like, you know, saying I'm sorry, but who's going to be held accountable? Why didn't they do it? Who was on that salary that paid, you know, in that 2016-2018? Who didn't do it? And are they going to be, is there any accountability on it? Or are people who, as you pointed out, may be living in London because they can't afford to live in Dublin, but not be able to come home at Christmas because of an error made by somebody on a high executive salary back in 2016-2018? I think we do need to work really hard to resolve it. Exactly as Emma said, we're an island economy. We can't operate in isolation. And also look at, should, you know, should there be oversight of what DAA is doing, and not just DAA, but all airports around the country nationally, when we are so reliant on air transport and transportation outside the country? Should there be an overseeing body, somebody to hold them to account?
Okay, well, Aon, what is the Labour Party position on emissions from the airline industry? Because, like, we have the farmers who are being asked to decrease emissions by 25%, but aviation is being told, listen, this problem should be fixed so you can fly 40 million passengers in and out of Ireland.
The Labour Party position is very clear that we face an existential crisis when it comes to climate change, and everything comes secondary to that. Now, and I don't want to isolate individual, you know, sectors or industries and say you're the problem, you need to change, and it's all your fault. I don't think that brings anybody with us. I know, as a Dublin representative, I want to see transport radically change in Dublin, so people aren't using the private car, they're using public transport.
But change
more
is happening, you know, in most areas.
Change is
apart
happening,
from
but I just
aviation.
I don't get the sense that there is really the realization just how dangerous and damaging, you know, climate change is for us here across the world. It's affecting migration patterns. It's affecting everything, and everything is going to have to change. And that we can't start off with, yes, it is a problem, but every time we have a political debate. And I worry about it because, you know, when it comes to the agriculture sector, when it comes to various different industries, there always seems to be a yes, but. Well, you know, it's going to be a very difficult situation to hand on to our children in 30 years' time and look them in the face.
But my point to you is that change is happening in agriculture. Change is happening in road transport.
It needs to happen in aviation as well. And to be honest, I'd be more likely to listen to what a MAGA Republican has to say than Michael O'Leary. I don't believe he's somebody who really is on the is part of the solution here.
But we have, you know, all sorts of interested parties in what happens at Dublin Airport,
yeah, and I'm
including the minister sitting beside you there,
absolutely,
who says we need connectivity.
And we do. And I represent that part of the world, and there's a huge amount of workers who work there. But we can't close our eyes to the immediate challenge and danger that climate change poses us all.
All right, well, let's move on and talk about the Apple ruling during the week, which was a shock, I think, to everybody that Ireland gets that €14 billion, according to the European Court of Justice. So, Eimear, we've been told, and it has been said in analysis, that this is embarrassing for us, that it may cause reputational damage. Now, you might say that that is not the case, but surely you have to concede that it does put Ireland and taxation back on the agenda at a very sensitive time when we're in the height of a US presidential campaign.
Yes, that's correct. And I suppose it's important to bear in mind, though, that this arises from a historical case, from a situation in the 1990s and a case taken a number of years later. Since then,
it wasn't the 1990s now, it was 2016
was when the case was taken exactly in relation to previous. So I suppose the two big changes that have happened since then.
No, I think it was in relation to taxation law. In fact, Eoin, I think you were in government at the time. Mm. It's in relation to that period, isn't it? Mm.
And since so then,
it's not that historic, but also I think excusing it as
things have changed since then.
Things have changed since then. So we've had.
But on the one hand, you in government say this is historic. Yeah. On the other hand, you say we had to pay €10 million defending this because there were reputational issues at stake. Now,
well, the reputational issues that were at stake was that we didn't have certainty and we didn't have stability for FDI, and we know that in order to retain foreign direct investment, in order to win foreign direct investment, in order to protect jobs, we need a landscape where there's certainty. We now have that. Listen, I suppose it's not what we were expecting when that case was taken a number of years ago, but we do have finality and we have certainty. And we know now since then there's been two significant changes that have again provided more certainty for foreign direct investment. It's a really important part of our economy is multinationals. When you take account of spin-off trade, multinational corporations between direct employment and spin-off trade employ almost 50% of our population, and that's huge, huge, both from tax perspective but also from a jobs perspective. And it's really important that we now work to make sure that we're protecting those jobs, that we're winning more investment, and that we're utilising this €14 billion not for day-to-day spending but for key infrastructure challenges, for key problems that are facing Ireland, and we know we have them, and I think this money can be put to use for that. It's obviously not in our bank account yet, and we have until it is for government to be making decisions around those options and those opportunities as to how we can spend that money best to really inject goodness into both our economy and to our society.
One way to spend it, Elaine, and I think this is a suggestion from you, is to use the JP McManus model. Explain how that would work.
Yeah, well, I think obviously the government and ministers will be, I think, fighting for every million in this 13 or almost 14 billion now that will be available. There's a number of options available to the government. They could pay down a bit of our national debt. Now, 14 billion isn't going to go very far. I think we're over 200 billion right now, but it would help ease the interest burden on that money that we still owe. Another, I think, sensible and prudent option would be to put it into one of the two longer term strategic funds that were set up by this government. Now, we're in election cycle. While they're very, very, as I said, prudent options, I don't think they're options that maybe you can go to people on the doors and say, look what I've done, look at how we're going to help you.
Saving all your money in a strategic investment fund.
Exactly. So I think ministers and the minister around this table has already suggested infrastructural projects, things that people can see in their own communities that have been achieved, have been delivered, whether it's a road, whether it's a swimming pool, a local theatre, things that people would really appreciate. But maybe at the moment the money isn't there, or those are not priorities that are top.
So divvy it up county by county.
Yeah, and I think if you were to give a few million to every county, like we saw with the JP endowment of a million to every county across the country to GA, it would be something that politicians could go out in their constituencies and say, that's where the Apple funds went. That's, you know, as I said, maybe a new swimming pool or a ring road, something very tangible. And it would be maybe a legacy project that people would appreciate and would be able to see where the money went.
Louise,
that
you
might
say,
not be the most sensible, though.
Well, Louise says no.
Yeah, well, I'm sitting here listening and going, it's great for those people who can avail of a swimming pool and that. Whereas I was at an ESRI report last week about child poverty and deprivation. And in the last year, child poverty went from 200,000 living in enforced deprivation to 230,000. So I absolutely would not agree with putting swimming pools until we get some strong and significant indent to those 230,000 children living in poverty. And it's a shame in this country.
But we've been told this cannot be used for day-to-day spending. and it won't be used for day-to-day spending. Isn't that one of the first things that Peter Gimthornish has said?
Yeah, I mean, there's ways of moving things around that you can use things that might have gone for infrastructure in the budget that could be directed towards even legacy projects about getting children out of living in enforced deprivation. Mm-hmm. The fact we had 30,000, we're supposed to be tackling child poverty and we had an increase of 30,000. The ESRI report last week also said that in real terms, social welfare rates have fallen by 6% since 2021 when you exclude the one-off payments, which they will start tapering off and people will feel the real loss of that 6% loss of income. And 230,000 children living in poverty. That's an absolute shame in this country when we have this money there. And also, I'd say it's even a greater shame that when we know that the group that's most living in poverty are children. You know, that is absolutely shocking, that the age group most experienced in deprivation is children. And that is a legacy issue. And that is, to me, that is infrastructure, because putting the resources into making sure every child has a hot meal, every child has a bed to sleep in, that is how you get a cohesive society. That's real infrastructure. That's a society that we can all look forward to. And, you know, having prevention and early intervention supports and area-based childhood programmes and all of that will really make an difference. That is a type of infrastructure.
Yeah, I mean, there's so many ways to slice this. We had Eddie Casey in from the Fiscal Advisory Council, and he explained to us that if you were to put it in one of the strategic investment fund vehicles, that the interest you would earn would be 700 million a year. It is extraordinary, isn't it? What that money could do if it's managed sensibly and carefully. Whether it'll be used to solve a problem like that, I don't know. Eoin, what do you expect the decision will be?
Well, I don't know. I was laughing when you used the HAP McManus model, because I think he could probably pay a bit more tax himself. But anyway, I want to make one point just on corporation tax, because I think there's a danger, more than a danger, that we as a country are far too dependent on corporation tax. If there's three companies who provide about 10 billion a year on corporation tax to the state, if anything was to happen in that area, if any of them were to decide to relocate, that's a massive, massive hole that we'd have to deal with. And my worry about the budgetary cycle and the trade-off and auction politics that's going on at the moment, that particularly from Fine Gael and Fianna Fáil, is as if how much taxes we need to cut if we're totally dependent on this corporation tax for where we go into the future, and we're having, you know, we must cut inheritance tax, we must cut income tax. We made this mistake 15 years ago when we hollowed out you know, the basic sustainable taxation base of the country, and we depended it all on one particular sector. And my fear is that we're doing the exact same again. Now, on the 14 billion, I think infrastructure is going to be very, very important. Certainly housing is the greatest social need of our time. You know, there's any amount that we could do in terms of wind farming, as Jed Nash has said. But certainly, I think there has to be a call for sporting infrastructure in particular to be utilised in the next period of time. But I don't want this money to be used, though, is as a payoff for a couple of racist independents to support the government when it's formed in the next couple of months.
Eimear.
So I suppose just on that point of corporation tax, you're right, it is a significant stream of income for government from a taxation perspective, and that's been well flagged by Minister for Finance and the current Minister for Public Expenditure and Reform, Pascal Donoghue, who has worked cross-party with Fianna Fáil to establish exactly those strategic investment funds that we've been speaking about. So they are funded by a stream coming from corporation tax. And the reason for that is because we don't want to become reliant on it. We need to make sure that so that's coming straight from what we're calling the windfall. And if that funding goes into making sure that if we end up in a recession again, we have fundings there from an infrastructure perspective to invest right back in to make sure that all of the National Development Plan projects can still happen regardless of where we are in the economic cycle.
But I think that's prudent. But you're hollowing out the existing taxation base by constantly, turning on inheritance tax, reducing personal rates of
income
tax.
But Eoin, have we not heard more about increases to child benefit? We've heard about more people being eligible for...
Yeah, I accept that, but more
fuel
goes,
allowance.
Most of that is actually going up to European norms, and most of that goes back straight into the economy.
So that should be happening. You don't have an argument with those things.
What I'm pointing out is that these things need to be backed
paid
up.
For.
They need to be paid for. And we can't constantly have an argument about where we can lower taxation and up spending, because that's exactly what happened 15 years ago, and that's exactly what caused the crash.
And that's exactly why it's so important that we have responsible people leading the government who are avoiding us going down that route. That's what we have here in Ireland. That's why we have these strategic investment funds. set up and established, one specifically on climate, one on infrastructure, there to provide for us in
but
the future.
But they won't pay the day-to-day bills. Like, if you do cut the tax base to an extent that we run out of money, you're not going to be able to use the Strategic Investment Fund to plug the gap. That's not what it's for.
It's not for day-to-day bills. We're not becoming reliant on it for day-to-day bills.
But you can't.
That's
then you
also
can't point,
why this 14
but you can't
billion.
Point to that, to solve the problem that Aon has raised, because that's not what the money is for in those funds.
No, what the money is for is to make sure that we can continue to develop as a country and a society from a national development plan perspective and from a climate change perspective. Day-to-day funds are managed, as we know, through the budgetary cycle. We're in really good position in that. I know we're speaking at the moment about the budget. There's going to be 1.8 billion euro worth to spend, 1.4 billion worth of a tax package. We're in a positive place on that. And what we need to make sure is that our finances are run from a fiscally prudent perspective to ensure that we can continue on that trajectory. Mm. We're at full employment in Ireland.
Time and time again, you have IFAC and other bodies coming out and warning the government. This isn't just this year, it's last year, it's going back years and years.
And those warnings are heeded. That's why we set
not
up these
because the government is
writing
its
own strategic funds
cutting,
were established.
But how can you justify... You just said a tax budget there, a tax saving cut of budget of 1.4 billion. How can you justify that when we are such, you know, we have a housing crisis, we have a hospital crisis? Why would you be cutting taxes when we have such a bad...
For exactly the reason you outlined earlier, because as inflation is rising, the cost of living is rising, and we need to make sure that families are able to meet that cost of living. And that's why tax reductions are necessary, because inflation is, while it's tapering off now, we're at 2.2% across the Eurozone.
As in fairness, like the Minister of Education did in certain aspects in terms of making school books free, school meals, etc. You make things that every other European country takes for granted of being free. You know, GP visits, for example.
Exactly.
Well, hold on. Yeah, under sixes happened 10 years ago when Labour was in government. Nothing has happened on that in that area since then.
Oh, they've included up to under eights now.
I mean, that's 2 years in what? 2 years advancement in 10 years?
But what Eimear is telling you is they can afford it. They can afford to do both.
My point is that, and as you know has been said, that there is far too much emphasis on this, you know, not one say one source of income, but a primary source of income or a disproportionate source of income in terms of corporation tax. And if that was to waver, or if that was to be dissipated, and I said three of these companies provide 10 billion, then we would be
you're in the lofty corridors now in Brussels. You don't have to worry about a general election, but there's a general election coming, so the giveaways will continue. Until people comply.
It's irresponsible of politicians to say to electorates that we can cut taxes and increase spending and that everything will be fine. Because I lived through that, and we all lived through that 15 years ago, and it was built on sand.
What we need to do is ensure that families can pay for rising bills. We know energy has gone up. We've seen it in electricity. We have those one-off payments that Louise has referenced, which are so important to those households. That's what we're talking
about
in this budget.
Why is cutting inheritance tax more important than providing free childcare?
It's not.
That's the only thing you seem to talk about, though.
That's absolutely not true. And
it
we
is.
Were talking about childcare
But if you're just going back, if you're talking about the one-off payments, every family in the country got double child benefit last year. Not every family needed it. There was a two euro increase for qualified children. They were the children who were most in need. It would have, you know, if we look at the packages, even just if just Children's Rights Alliance came out with an ask this week of saying that if you increased the increase for the qualified child by 6 euro for under 12s and 12 euro or 15 euro for over 12s, it would cost I think 136 million. Whereas if you give it, and that would make a massive impact on those families on a day to day, those families. Of the 230,000 living in forced deprivation. However, if you give the one-off package to families like Claire's, families like mine, that are not necessarily in need of, it would cost 170 million. Yes, it might be a vote catcher, but it's not really targeting to those children
and
who
that's,
are
and
deepest.
And that is why we are also providing targeted measures. Pascal Donoghue outlined it very clearly at our thinking in Tullamore this week. We're going to be providing for carers. We're going to be providing for people with disabilities. We're going to be providing with additional targeted measures for the families
that need it the most. But that hasn't happened in the last two years. I only met with family carers this week.
I just want to bring Elaine in here.
We did get increases in the threshold in the last budget. And I hope they'll be getting them again in the upcoming budget.
Just on childcare, it is emerging. It has emerged over the last couple of days, certainly, as one of the areas where there will be big bangs coming up to the budget. Sinn Féin have said they want a 10 euro a day policy. The Greens talking about this public childcare policy, Fine Gael too. That is an area. Do you think
the Labour Party policy?
What did you guys say? That you want a publicly funded?
Absolutely.
I think it certainly is, and we are in election mode now. And I think it's interesting this year, while we're only 3 weeks out from a budget, we've been talking on this panel more about the general election and the policies that people will be putting forward in an election campaign and not really budget measures. So that's, I think, where politicians are at now. Mm-hmm. You had this week Roderick O'Gorman, the Green Party leader, come out and speak about moving towards a state-run model in areas where childcare is non-existent
right
now. And
he wants that 560 for new parents, which Heather Humphrey said was a good idea, interestingly.
And we had Heather Humphreys, we had the Taoiseach then as well come out and say that his party, Fine Gael, will come up with a roadmap as well if they are returned to government around a state-provided childcare and early years education service. We then had Sinn Féin yesterday, as you said, with that 10 euro a day flat or max.
And Labour saying, hey, we've been saying this for years.
Exactly. And I think where we're at now is childcare has almost become the new housing or the new healthcare. And it's probably very clever of political parties to choose childcare because unlike healthcare or unlike housing, it's something if you put your mind to, you can probably solve within the lifetime of a government. If you look at housing, for instance, if you were to give everyone on the housing waiting list a house tomorrow, your waiting list would be coming up again the following day or certainly the following year. I think if you set your mind to it as a government to once and for all address childcare inadequacies across the country, you probably could do it. So it's a good one to go on for political parties.
All right. And the election date for you to have this conversation for the 15th time this week?
We flip-flop over and back, but I thought it was interesting. The Taoiseach this week, he was on Morning Ireland from the Fine Gael Thinking, was pressed time and time again around the timing of an election, and he said this government will go its full term. When he was asked, does full term mean 2025? He said this government will go its full term. People understand what that is. Now, I think from speaking to those in Fine Gael at the Thinking, they assume that full term means you do the budget and you run.
All right. Well, we don't have too much longer to wait. Thank you all for coming in.